Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. On this program, we will remind you periodically that there is a New York City mayoral election this year, and we will be interviewing between now and the September primary every declared candidate for the Democratic or Republican nomination for mayor. Then, of course, we'll go on to the general election. People are behaving in the media as if they're is no election for mayor this year just because Mayor de Blasio was not indicted. Now, recently declared for the Democratic nomination is Bob Ganji, executive director of the Police Reform Organizing Project. He is a longtime criminal justice reform activist, having worked for many years before his current position, specifically in prison reform. Let's find out what his campaign is about. Hi, Bob. Welcome back to WNYC.
Pleased to be here, Brian. I'm disappointed to know that you're going to interview other candidates. I'd assumed...
just you?
Yeah, just me. And it would, after that, it'd be a slam dunk on who should be the next mayor of the city.
We looked it up, and this is your seventh time on the show going back to 1996.
Oh, okay.
So welcome back in your new role as mayoral candidate.
Thank
Why
you.
Are you running for mayor?
I voted for de Blasio in 2013, and I think I, along with a lot of New Yorkers, were very encouraged by his election. He campaigned on what's commonly referred to as a progressive agenda, and we've been, I and I think many other New Yorkers, enormously disappointed. The key issue where we are at least initially most aggressively critical is on policing policy. As you know, de Blasio has embraced the Bill Bratton legacy of quota-driven broken windows policing, which we used to say, or I used to say, in our view, it is racist practices. I don't say that anymore because it is undeniably a racist practice. It's a deeply inhumane practice. It involves the targeting, the arresting, the giving summons to low-income New Yorkers of color, sometimes via bogus arrests and summonses for people who did nothing wrong, and for engaging in activities that have been virtually decriminalized in well-to-do white communities. And it does enormous harm to people. We're not so aggressively opposed because it's illegal, which it is, and because it's unconstitutional, which it is, but because it does harm to people. And it also inflicts a kind of community-wide trauma on low-income communities of color, African-American and Latino communities. I'll give you one quick story. The Police Reform Organizing Project, where I used to work, as you said, we monitor the misdemeanor arraignment parts in New York City. Everybody who's arrested in the city has to be arraigned. So we want to get a pretty good idea of what NYPD arrest practices are, and that's a foolproof way of doing it. So there was a case where a man was, a middle-aged Hispanic man, was charged with possession of a dangerous weapon in the fourth degree. That almost always means a gravity knife, which is like when I was young, we called it a switchblade. You flick your wrist and it opens. So I could tell he was very unhappy with what had happened. He pled guilty to disorderly conduct, and he walked out in a visible huff. So I followed him out. I asked him, well, how did the police know that you had a gravity knife on you? And he said they didn't, that I was driving my car, and they pulled me over. And when I went into my glove compartment to get my registration and license, I had a utility knife in my glove compartment, and I used a utility knife for my work. I'm a handyman, and I explained that to the police. And he said they arrested me anyway. And then I said, well, did they give you a reason for pulling you over? And he said, no, I guess that's what you get for being Latino. Mm-hmm. And that's an attitude shared by many, many African-American and Latino and other people of color in our city. And so
I know there was a reform effort to decriminalized possession of gravity knives,
right,
in particular in the state legislature, which,
right,
I guess failed, right?
Failed, right. Cuomo didn't support it. And also
– But you're running for mayor, and let me back up a step and say Mayor de Blasio would probably argue he has ended Bloomberg-style stop and frisk. Both arrests and crime are down. He's embraced the proposal to close Rikers Island and reduce the inmate population by thousands. He's not exactly Jeff Sessions.
No, but he's still supporting blatantly racist policing that goes on every day. It's true that he and Bratton reduced the use of stop and frisk. It's still used, not nearly at the level of its use under Bloomberg and Kelly. And it's still like 88-89% African-American Latino people who are stopped. The problem with de Blasio's claims, because he tries to lay claim to being a criminal justice reformer, they reduced the use in stop and frisk. They did not change the fundamental approach to law enforcement, which continues to target low-income people of color. To continue the reference to gravity knives, as you know, de Blasio embraced this 10-year plan to close Rikers. It was a recommendation of the Lippman Commission. It was a Blue Ribbon Commission that studied the issue. They also include recommendations to decriminalize prostitution, marijuana possession, gravity knife possession, and fare evasion. And de Blasio has rejected all those recommendations.
Now, 2 weeks ago, when the mayor was here, we asked a question that came in from Twitter about why he continues with broken windows policing, even though in the context of the Trump administration, some people caught up in it will now be deported,
right,
under Trump for fairly small things.
Right.
And here's a bit of the mayor's response.
Okay.
A lot of the things that people put in the category of broken windows, the low-level offenses, there's a huge percentage of those where there's no arrest to begin with. Because of a lot of the changes we've made in the approach to NYPD, because of some of the laws and actions by the city council, what's happening more and more now is our officers are empowered to give warnings or to give a summons, actions that do not involve an arrest, do not involve fingerprinting. When there is, obviously on marijuana, for example, low-level marijuana possession, 2 years ago we made a very clear decision to stop arresting for that and to do summons instead.
And then he went on to talk about which crimes actually get reported to,
right,
the federal government. But are you ready to have that debate?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's almost extraordinary that he keeps referencing that they've stopped – that the city police have stopped arresting people for marijuana possession. Last year, these are the NYPD's own numbers. They arrested over 18,000 people for possession of small amounts of marijuana. It's actually an increase of the number of arrests for marijuana possession over 2015. They also gave out over 20,000 criminal summonses for possession of small amounts of marijuana. There were nearly 40,000 punitive interactions between the NYPD and New Yorkers for marijuana possession. So either the mayor does not know that, or he's deliberately misrepresenting the truth. Let me finish. At least 90% of the people, we don't have figures for the racial makeup of the people who get summonses. We know, again, NYPD's own statistics, 90% of the people arrested for the possession of small amounts of marijuana are New Yorkers of color, despite the research and the experience that shows that white people use and sell a drug in equal or greater proportions to African-American and Latino people. It is a blatantly racist practice. And the other point about broken windows, the most common arrest in New York City, either the first or the second most common arrest, is called theft of services. It's for fare evasion. In 2015, it was the most common arrest. Last year, it was the second most common arrest. We know in January of this year, there were over 2,000 arrests for fare evasion. O'Neill, who's the commissioner, has admitted that is a deportable offense. So de Blasio is attempting to project himself as a champion of immigrant rights and a champion of broken windows policing. That's not a credible posture. The two things are in direct conflict with each other.
Listeners, what do you want to ask New York City mayoral hopeful Bob Ganji, executive director, I guess now past executive director of the Police Reform Organizing Project, who has declared for the Democratic primary? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I see you're also running on housing, like,
right,
homes, not just shelters for,
right,
the homeless. Where would those homes come from? Where would the money come from?
Well, our central criticism of de Blasio's policy to deal with affordable housing and homelessness, one is there's not enough energy and planning going in providing affordable housing units. He brags about adding or projected to add 200,000 affordable housing units. We've talked to community-based groups where those neighborhoods are being built. We've seen the statistics, and the statistics show that 80% of the so-called affordable housing units that de Blasio is promoting have rents higher than the median rents for the people who live in those communities. We're also raising other issues. There's a bill in the city council which he has sat on, which would increase licenses for street vendors, the number of licenses. He's not moving on that. And the NYPD has a peddler squad that regularly harasses and targets street vendors. He is refusing to support proposals to reduce fares for low-income New Yorkers who use the subway and the buses. Instead, he or the head of the police department are directing officers to arrest people or ticket people for fare evasion. Almost everybody who engages in turnstile jumping is a poor person. Most people do not attempt to jump the turnstile for the thrill of it. The city policy should be to help those people, to assist those people so they can use the subway, get to jobs, get to job interviews, get to school.
But let me get back to housing. You propose to get more truly affordable housing built. I almost said adorable because I see that I started to misspell affordable and my autocorrect changed it to adorable housing,
right.
Which is
that's a nice little slip.
We
like adorable,
right?
Affordable housing. We're going to include that, Brian, and we'll credit you.
So de Blasio says he's doing everything he can to make the economy of his 200,000 unit goal possible. But again, the money has to come from somewhere. So he has subsidies, but he also has to keep developers in the game with enough, incentives for them to
build. We would not keep real estate developers in the game.
So how do you get to more affordable housing?
Well, we would build it in collaboration and cooperation with community-based housing groups that have experience. There are actually a lot of them in the city that have experience renovating houses, building houses, and maintaining houses. We would include the real estate developers if they were willing on a contractual basis to provide technical assistance to the community-based housing groups. The problem with using the major real estate developers is their main goal, and this is not a criticism, their main goal is to make a profit. That's the kind of institution and organization they are. They're not particularly interested in providing decent housing for low-income people. Community-based housing groups are. In some cases, that's their entire focus. And they've been very critical of the de Blasio administration and its representatives who have not been willing to negotiate, consult, and work with community-based housing groups. And the money would come from, I'll give you a couple examples of things I would not do if I became mayor. There's $275 million that de Blasio has proposed to build a new police academy. There's the $10.6 billion for the new jails required to follow through on de Blasio's plan, which we think is a cockamamie plan to close Rikers Island.
Let me jump in on that because you're a longtime prison reform advocate.
Right.
Here we have from the Lippman Commission, which you cited before, this plan to close Rikers Island and build five borough jails instead. I guess Melissa Mark Viverito, the council speaker, is saying near each courthouse in each borough. And de Blasio has endorsed, I guess, at least four of them, but not in Staten Island. That's another story.
Another political strategic move on his
part. But why would that general framework not be the best possible outcome of closing Rikers Island?
There's a couple of things. One is,
and they are proposing to reduce the inmate population by half, which means fewer smaller arrests.
But they haven't, particularly when de Blasio rejects what we consider to be the principal recommendation of the Lippman Commission, which is to decriminalize those four offenses I mentioned before. That would contribute to a reduced population in the jails. Our proposal, we also want to close Rikers Island. At the same time, we point out that housing people in the local jails doesn't necessarily by itself improve conditions in those facilities when you're using the same correction officers and when the culture that unfortunately prevails in the jails in Rikers Island
can easily be transferred. But you still need to have the facilities.
Well, no. See, what we're proposing is, and it's interesting, obviously de Blasio's not proposing this, Mark Viverito's not proposing this, and the Lippmann Commission, for all its good work, did not propose this. The single government policy and practice that most drives the incarceration of the unnecessary incarceration of people on Rikers Island and in the other city jails is broken windows policing. We would literally, and it would be a day one pledge. I'll make a day one pledge. We would direct the police department to abandon broken windows policing and abolish the quota system, which is, again, the government practice that more than any other government practice causes confinement of people on Rikers Island. We would take steps like that. We would propose the elimination of cash bail. We would decriminalize the kind of offenses that the Lippmann Commission has called for and reduce the population on Rikers Island to the extent that we could then put the people still incarcerated in the local jails that already exist. And we would include possibly rehabbing the Queensborough jail, which has been closed for a number of years.
Let's get a couple of phone calls in. For Democratic mayoral hopeful Bob Ganji, who announced on April 5th. He's a longtime criminal justice reform advocate. And John in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Mr. Ganji sounds like an extremely experienced criminal rights activist, but I'd like to hear his position on a lot of other issues relating to sort of the health of New York City. I've been thinking of what would his approach be to dealing with, our schools, education, job creation, our, decaying infrastructure.
Right. And we're not going to have time, obviously, to go into all of those today. Your press release focuses on criminal justice and touches a little bit on...
I have responses to...
On housing.
Right.
Would you say that the central organizing principle of your candidacy is criminal justice reform?
No. The central organizing principle, criminal justice is certainly a part of it, is to promote social, racial, and economic justice across a range of issues. On the public schools, for example, one of the things I learned, because I've been studying other issues, is that one factor that all the research agrees will improve academic outcomes for all students across race and class lines is small class size. Right now, a typical class size in the public schools could be 25 children, 28 children, 32 children. In the private schools in the city, it's 12 children. It's 15 children. So we are committed to promoting as a key priority for the public schools small class sizes all across the city. We're also committed to promoting desegregation of the schools in New York City. New York City's school system is the third most segregated school system in the country. And research also shows that integrated schools improve academic outcomes for all students. On other issues, for example, we're going to promote free college tuition at the CUNY schools for low and middle-income people. I talked about the kind of approach to affordable housing and homelessness that we'll take. Other issues we'll promote, for example, I mentioned this before, de Blasio is sitting on a bill that would greatly expand the number of licenses available for street vendors. We will aggressively support that bill if I'm fortunate enough to win the election in November. So we have a vision for the city, which is to create a livable, affordable, inclusive, and safe city for all New Yorkers. And we have very specific policy proposals, not only on policing and criminal justice, but on housing, public schools, higher education, transportation, to advance that agenda.
Bernadette in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hello, Bernadette.
Yes, hello. I'm calling about what's your position on the constitutional right to speedy trial, which doesn't appear to exist in New York State when a person like Khalif Browder sits in Rikers for 3 years over an alleged theft of a backpack. What's your plan to speed up the processing of cases in the city?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And the Khalif Rada case is this very obviously very painful example of how dysfunctional the legal culture is in New York City. So we would take a number of steps. The New York City's legal culture is probably the most lackadaisical of any large urban center in the country. So we would promote. Now, we can't the mayor doesn't control the courts, doesn't control the district attorneys. But what we would promote, and we would use the bully pulpit of the mayor's office. For example, one thing that would move the cases forward more quickly is something called open discovery. Right now, the New York City's district attorneys oppose open discovery. And what open discovery would do, and there are cities in different parts of the country that have it, it would require that the district attorney hands over all the evidence in a case to the defense attorney on day one. So the defense attorney doesn't have to file motions to get information about the case. And the way open discovery works is the defense attorney knows what the evidence that the DA has on his or her client, and the district attorney knows the defense attorney knows. So there's less jockeying, there's less strategizing about how to advance the case, and the cases get settled more quickly. We would also put pressure on the Office of Court Administration to limit the number of court appearances that judges permit. Right now, if the judges are hearing a case and the defense side or the DA side is not ready, the judge just rolls the case over to another date. We would put pressure on the judges to limit court appearances to 5 per case. So that, and if the DA is not ready to go to trial or to present the evidence in 5 by the 5th appearance, the judge would dismiss the case. So there are very specific things that the may could do, that the DAs could do, that the judges could do to move forward cases so we would never have a situation like the Khalif Browder case to begin with. Now, one other factor. Khalif Browder's family The issue, what's commonly thought of in the public is Khalif Browder's family was too poor to come up with the $3,000 or the $3,500 bail set on him. Actually, they could have raised that amount of money, but Khalif Browder was held without bail because the arrest constituted a probation violation. So we would promote a change in the probation rules that if someone was on probation and got arrested, it wouldn't automatically lead to that person being held without bail.
So, all right. So we are just about out of time. Again, listeners, this is a New York City election year, and we will be interviewing between now and the September primary every declared candidate for the Democratic or Republican nomination for mayor. Then, of course, after that, we'll go on to the general election. We've been talking with Bob Ganji, who declared on April 5th for the Democratic nomination for mayor. He's been a longtime criminal justice reform advocate in New York City. And do you already qualify for the ballot, or what do you have to do between now and then?
To get on the ballot, we have to get 3,750 qualifying signatures in a 5-week period in June and July. It's June 6th to July 13th. The experts advise us that we get at least 10,000 signatures because so many of the signatures you get won't meet the requirements. And I want to take this opportunity to ask people to go to ganjiformayor.com. That's our website. You could reach out to us directly via email. You could sign up to volunteer for the campaign. You could press the donate button and contribute to the campaign. So we are looking for volunteers to help us with the petition drive. We're also looking for contributions because in order to officially participate in the debates that are going to be held over the summer, each candidate for mayor has to raise $175,000. That's a heavy lift for us. Obviously, for someone like de Blasio with his contacts with major donors, it is not. So any way that you can help our campaign, we would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
And thanks for coming in.
Thank you.